Hi, Helen Hong.
Hi, J. Keith Van Stratton.
This is a very special time of year. What time is it?
It's Max Fun Drive time.
That's right. You know, we're really grateful that because of Max Fun members, we can keep doing this show during this very weird and kind of awful time, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say doing this podcast is one of the highlights of sometimes bleak times in quarantine.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear you say that we can provide some light for you, Helen. And it's actually one of my favorite things about being on social media is hearing the same kind of feedback from our listeners. It really means so much to us that our show means so much to you. And that's kind of why we're doing a drive right now, to remind you that you're the reason that we can make this content for you to enjoy. Max Fun is audience supported, which means that we are free, and we always will be, to make the content that you enjoy because people like you contribute. How do people contribute, Helen?
They can choose a monthly amount that's comfortable for them. The majority of people give $5 a month or $10 a month, and some upgrade to $20, $35, or even $100 a month for you high rollers out there. It's really all about what works for you.
Absolutely. You're going to hear a little bit more about how you can get involved in the Max Fun Drive later in the show. For now, though, please know that you can go at any time to MaximumFun.org/join. That's MaximumFun.org/join. In the meantime, please enjoy this brand new episode that features two Max Fun hosts. And, of course, we recorded it during these times, so this will be a remote episode from our homes, and it's going to sound great because of the wonderful people that Max Fun can hire because of your support. I think they get it. Do you, Helen?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
Play the music.
Are you a real know-it-all? Do you annoy your family by shouting the answers while watching Jeopardy? Do you drive people crazy when you start a sentence with, well, actually? Well, guess what? You can go fact yourself. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Go Fact Yourself, the show where we take the smartest people we know and make them look dumb. And then smart again. I'm Helen Hong. And now socially distancing from our homes in Los Angeles, here's our moderator, J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen Hong. Nice to see you again. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, J. Keith. I am weathering, what is it, day 9,042 of the pandemic?
Who knows? Numbers have lost their meaning.
Yeah, things are good. Me and Dodger are just, you know, kicking it.
Yes. Now, Dodger is your dog. And actually, that brings up a point that I wanted to bring it up. This, of course, is the Max Fun Drive. We're doing a month-long low-key Max Fun Drive. We had to postpone it for a couple times. I say we as if I had anything to do with it. But no, Max Fun had to postpone it a couple times. But we're happy to be doing it now. And one of the things about Max Fun Drive is it's a chance for our listeners to sort of thank us by supporting the show and supporting the network and becoming members or upgrading their membership. And it's a chance for us to thank our listeners by doing something special. And so what I started doing last year, and I have no idea where this idea came from, was that if somebody posted on Twitter that they were supporting our show, I would thank them by posting a unique photo of my cat, Cookie. Since that last Max Fun Drive, I have a new pet, Muffin, also a cat, and you have a new pet, Dodger, a dog.
That's right.
So I thought, oh, well, this will be fun this year when people show their support. We'll thank them by giving a picture of any one of those three pets, and we'll let them choose which one that they want. And I am kind of devastated, might be the right word, that Dodger has gotten more requests so far than Cookie and Muffin combined.
Oh, and is that true?
Yes.
Cookie and Muffin combined.
Cookie and Muffin combined do not have the same amount of demand that Dodger has.
Two cats do not even equal one dog.
Yeah. So you have kept sending me more and more pictures of Dodger. And every time I get a package of those photos, I think, well, we're not going to need all these. And so far, we have needed all of them.
Oh, wow.
Well, listeners, if you'd like to get your own unique photo of either Dodger or Muffin or Cookie, please tweet at us at GoFactorPod. And again, we thank you for your support. Today on Go Fact Yourself, two guests will compete to answer questions about facts they know, facts they might not know, and frankly, facts they should know. Plus, we'll meet actual experts on two very different topics. And finally, we'll declare one of our guests the winner of today's show. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Helen, who is up first?
He is a musician and writer who hosts the podcasts Roderick on the Line, Omnibus, and here on the Maximum Fun Network, friendly fire, it's John Roderick.
Hello, John Roderick.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
So wonderful for you to join us. You are in Seattle, Washington, am I right?
Yes, in my podcasting bunker.
Yes, well, speaking of bunker, you cover a lot of bunker scenarios on the podcast Friendly Fire, which is a podcast basically about war movies. What appealed to you about covering war movies in a podcast?
Well, you know, the initial premise just seemed like it was a lot of low-hanging fruit, right? Mm-hmm. You watch a John Wayne movie and you make fun of it. But as we dove into watching war movies, we realized that they're really a tremendous window on our culture, on history, on oftentimes masculinity, right? Throughout time, because there are some war movies that don't even have a woman in them.
What?
If you can believe it, just guys fighting. The podcast went from being what we thought was going to be kind of a whimsical shooting fish in a barrel to being an adventure in cultural criticism, and it's now kind of our favorite thing that any of us do.
Oh, that's really neat.
Wow.
But for Max Fun donors, we have a separate feed called the Pork Chop feed, where we watch movies that are borderline war movies, like maybe there's war happening next door, or maybe it's like,
like
Terminator, where it's like, yeah, it's a space war of robots, and that's just for Max Fun donors.
Oh, okay. That's
very
cool.
What a lovely perk. Another podcast that you do is with the wonderful Ken Jennings called Omnibus. How did you and Ken Jennings connect?
You know, Ken is from Seattle, and
say no more. You just run into each other at the coffee fish place.
Wait, Ken Jennings, the Jeopardy champion?
Yes.
Oh wow!
Yeah, greatest of all time. He and I met at Bumbershoot, and he asked me to be a part of a book promo he was doing for one of his books on trivia. And you know, when you meet somebody and you just have an affinity for one another, we started just hanging out. And then it was actually Clear Channel that approached me through Chuck Bryant, frequent Max FunCon attendee, to see if I could get Ken to do a podcast.
What?
And I was like, well, I mean, I don't know. And they were like, no. See, can you put us in touch with Ken? And so I was like, yeah, okay, here.
And what was your pitch to Ken that did the trick?
Oh, I had no interest in Ken doing a podcast with these ding-dongs. I was like, they want to talk to you. Chuck's a friend. You know, here's your number. And Ken, to his credit, said to them, yeah, I'll do a podcast, but it has to be with John.
Wow. And all you wanted was an agency fee.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what I wanted. I wanted him to say no. But then we left the network and went solo about a year ago. So now we're an independent show.
The main thing that Omnibus does is tell the stories of sort of strange but true events in history. What's been the strangest event that you think that you've covered, one that surprised you guys?
Oh, you know, we get into it's what we're hoping is to do stories of things that we think are going to be lost when the apocalypse erases history.
Oh.
So no matter how bad your apocalypse is going to be, probably the Rolling Stones are going to make it through. Right?
Right.
I mean, Keith Richards has made it this far. What else could
right. You can't kill him.
Yeah.
Right? Like some futureling, some, you know, sentient moss is going to still have heard the song Satisfaction. But the sentient moss might not have heard of the Renault Le Car or the multiple defenestrations of Prague or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, like, so we're trying to sneak all that stuff in. We're recording the whole podcast on platinum discs and burying them in a salt mine.
Shooting them into space.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. That's right. So that the future Cthulhus can understand what we were doing.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Last thing I wanted to ask you about, of course, you're a very successful podcaster now, but you have become a very well-acclaimed musician. And even though a lot of people know you from your current band, The Long Winters, I understand that your most recent release is not exactly new music.
No, I had a band 20 years ago called the Western State Hurricanes, and it was, you know, 20 years ago in Seattle, it was right in that period after grunge was no longer really viable, but before indie rock had fully bloomed. And the Western State Hurricanes were a band that had you know, one foot in grunge, or the tail end of grunge, and one foot in a kind of nascent indie rock. And we made a record, but the record never came out. the band was beset by all the woe betide of band dynamics. And
yeah, that woe betide will get you.
It's the worst, right? Yeah, but it's great for getting stains out. But
Jesus.
But the record just sat on the shelf for 20 years, and finally there was enough interest from people around here that I went back and reviewed it and spent a lot of time working on it, and it finally came out just this spring, right before coronavirus shut everything down.
Aww.
So we played two shows here in Seattle, and for a lot of people, I think those two shows were the last live music they got to see before the...
Wow.
Well, what a way to send them home.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the record's called Through With Love, and it's by the band The Western State Hurricanes. You can find it on Bandcamp and all the other places.
Excellent. Well, we're happy that we find you here on our show. It's Mr. John Roderick. Thank you so much for being here, John. Helen, against whom will John be competing?
She is an actor, writer, and voice artist who can be heard on the Maximum Fun podcast, Mission to Zix, which she co-created. It's Mujan Zulfagari.
Hello, Mujan.
Hello. Hi.
Mission to Zix here on the Max Fun Network is an improvised sci-fi program, which is amazing because when you listen to it, it doesn't sound improvised. What's the process of that? Because you bring in all of these amazing production quality and effects and all that.
Yeah, it's, we get together. There's six of us who are improvisers. We know each other from what used to be the Upright Citizens Brigade in New York City. We record and improvise for about an hour and a half. And then we edit it all down together. It's all improvised, but we take away, you know, any plot lines that don't work, any things that we mess up on, and we make it a cute little 40 to 30 minutes long. But on top of that, we have a sound designer called Shane O'Connell who comes in there, and for about 30 to 40 hours, he spends doing sound design and making it an amazing audible experience.
Wow.
With your headphones.
Like, it really
you feel
is incredible.
Like it's a TV show. So, yeah, it's just a lot of post-production, but it's improvised.
And there are so many times I've been to improv shows in New York that I wish had been edited down to maybe 30 or 40 minutes, so I appreciate that. You co-created this show about people traveling on a spaceship, and you cast yourself as the spaceship.
Hell yeah.
Where did that idea come from? You figure, what are they going to do? Fire me? What are they going to fly on?
Yeah, they can't get rid of a ship. What are they going to be on land? That's another show. I just always like the idea of just playing a very, and the character who is badass and speaks her mind. And I thought, what if just she's the ship? As simple as that.
Are you murderous like Hal from 2001?
No, I mean, she does accidentally throw people out of her hall into space, but you can't assume that they can't breathe, you know? Maybe they could breathe.
As a writer, you've gotten to do some really fun projects, and your more recent one is with some characters that people might be very familiar with.
Yeah, I just got to write, and I'm writing for right now. It's the Not Too Late show with Elmo. So I've become part of the whole Sesame Street and Muppetverse on total accident.
Amazing.
I had not planned for this to happen.
That's amazing. Well, some of our previous guests and experts actually are working on that show as well. Jordan Morris, of course, who people know from Jordan, Jesse, Go. And Kirk Thatcher, who we had on our show as an expert on the Muppets. You're working with him as well.
Yeah, it's such a fun, weird world. Especially right now, we're doing like Zoom meetings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as you do as writers, you have Zoom meetings, which, you know, aren't the best. But everyone in that room is such a character. Like, we all encapsulate a certain Sesame character, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, we do read-throughs as the characters themselves, so it's an ageless group of people.
And what's it been like being part of this Muppet universe as far as, you know, the kind of recognition that you get and that kind of thing?
Sure. It's funny. I've worked on a bunch of things. Not many things anyone's ever heard of. The fact that I work to me is like, oh my God, that's amazing. But of all the projects I've worked on, big or small, this is the one that I've had a lot of my friends who are now becoming parents have reached out to me. And they're like, oh, my child loves you. And I'm like, I didn't have to work for you. Like, I got a child's love immediately. Elmo means so much to so many people. And I knew that, but didn't really know that until I was working for the man, Elmo.
I love that you're starstruck by a three-year-old Muppet boy.
Actually, I've had a couple experiences. We've had celebrities on set for something, and celebrities generally don't get fazed by anything. But working for the Not Too Late show, whenever we've had a celebrity come on set, they truly just see Elmo. They don't see the puppeteer, Ryan, who's like another amazing human, but they just see Elmo and they get transported back to who they were when they were three.
I love that.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you last thing about this. There's a line in your bio that I think you're kidding about, but I also not sure. which is she has horrified her Iranian parents and all her ancestors by pursuing a career in comedy. Have you actually horrified your parents and maybe ancestors?
100% yes. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
How do they express their horror? And has it gotten any better?
Oh, well, no. My mom's my accountant, so no. But
can't hide anything from her.
Little by little, they're getting if they see me on screen, they're very happy to see me on screen. Mm-hmm. And then they ask me how much I was paid. If I've written for something, they also ask me, like, well, why aren't you on screen? And I'm like, no, but that's not how writing works. And they're like, I don't believe you did it. One day they will be happy. But until then, they're not as horrified as they used to be. So,
well, we are very happy to have you. Thanks so much for joining us, Mujan Zulfikari.
Happy to be here.
Excellent. John and Mujan, we asked each of you to provide us with a few topics outside your field of work in which you feel you have some expertise. John, you told us you know a lot about muscle cars, the GMC RV, and what are you going to listen to when you're driving those muscle cars in the GMC RV? Why, of course, Judas Priest's albums, British Steel and Screaming for Vengeance.
That's right. That's right. Although I am firmly a Generation Xer, I really decided to just super double down on the culture of 1979 to 1980.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to talking about one of those topics. Whereas Mujan, you said you know a lot about celebrity relationships and divorces, Farsi phrases, and the movie Gremlins.
Yeah, those about sum up my personality.
All right. Well, later on, we'll ask each of you some in-depth trivia questions about one of those topics. But first, we're going to get your thoughts on something you might know nothing about. It's time to split some hairs with our What's the Difference round. We'll have one question for each of you, each worth up to 2 points. If either of you gives an incorrect answer, the other person has a chance to steal. Your topic today, that's so dirty. First up, John. John, your question comes from a listener. Who is it, Helen?
It's from Valerie Merriam DeBille of Austin, Texas. Listeners, if you'd like to submit a suggestion for our What's the Difference round, go to gofactyourpod.com and click on Get Involved.
All right. Thank you, Helen. And thank you, Valerie. John, in the topic of That's So Dirty, they both are ways of expressing a thought that some people might find dirty. But what's the difference between obscenity and profanity? Obscenity and profanity.
Well, I don't know what obscenity is, but I know it when I see it.
paraphrasing the Supreme Court justice who was that monumental decision.
Obscenity is something that offends the senses, whereas profanity is dirty talk.
It's dirty talk. All right, we've got John's answer. We don't know yet if he is correct. Mujan, if you don't think he's got it right, you can steal. What do you think?
I don't know. I feel like I did know at one point, and I have all these swear words in my head now. But yeah, I'm going to say he's right.
You're just going to agree with John.
I'm going to agree with John.
That's a very interesting strategy. Well, this segment is becoming a bing that makes me want to. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Obscenity comes from the Latin word meaning offensive and is a reflection of how society as a whole views an expression. Material deemed to be obscene does not have protection from the First Amendment and may, in fact, be against the law. Profanity comes from a Latin word that means unholy and is a reflection of how a particular religious group views an expression. After all, profane is the exact opposite of sacred. Material deemed to be profane isn't necessarily against the law, but you shouldn't say it in church.
That's right. Now, a quick way to think about it is obscenity could land you in jail, whereas profanity could land you in hell. Fortunately, I don't believe in either of those things. Helen, how did they do?
I'm going to say neither one of you got that one right.
Yeah, it was an interesting strategy to agree with.
John. It's a strong start. It's a strong start for me.
But you guys are in it together, and we appreciate that. All right, no points there. But up next in That's So Dirty, Mujan. Mujan, your question also comes from a listener. Who is this, Helen?
It's from Trey Monahan of Portland, Oregon.
Thank you, Helen, and thank you, Trey. Mujan, in the topic of That's So Dirty, they both can make you dirty in the backyard, but what's the difference between soil and dirt? Soil and dirt.
Soil and dirt. I feel soil is natural and it's coming from the ground and it's more wet, while dirt is something you could add on to things and is more dry.
As opposed to coming from the ground, what, it comes from the sky?
It could come from some sort of exterior source, I believe.
Ah, I see. Okay, an exterior source, whereas soil is More of an internal process.
Yes, yes.
Excellent. All right, we have Mujan's answer. We don't know yet if she is correct. John, what do you think?
I like where Mujan was coming from. I feel like soil has been through a worm's butt.
Haven't we all?
Right, whereas dirt, it has not been through a worm's butt. And so I guess dirt is pre-worm, soil is post-worm.
Pre-worm and post-worm. You know, I did my post-wormal at Northwestern. Not a lot of people know that. All right, well, it is time to bury this segment deep in the ground. Let's go to Helen Hong at the judges' table for the facts.
Here are the facts. Soil is alive with living organisms and organic matter and supports life with naturally occurring nutrients and minerals. It is a complete and self-sustaining ecosystem and perfect for growing plants. Dirt has none of the organic materials found in soil and cannot support life. It is not good for growing healthy plants. And I know this because my pandemic hobby has been growing a garden on my balcony, and my cucumbers are killing it.
Excellent. And were those cucumbers planted in dirt, Helen?
No, they were not. They were planted in soil.
Ah. That's right. Soil is made up of elements that have been decomposing since Earth was created. Almost any living thing that's ever died ends up in soil. So remember, when you're relaxing in the garden, you could be hanging out with dinosaurs or your dead relatives. Helen, how did our guest do?
Oh, shudder. You know, John, I'm going to give you half point for the worm's butt comment, because that does imply that it is organic material.
Also, you said worm's butt, which I think automatically guarantees anyone half a point in any question we ask.
You know, we've all said worm's butt except Mujan, so Mujan?
All right. Starting off, worm's butt.
Yeah, there it is.
Next
question.
I also love the concept of pre-worm's butt and post-worm's butt.
Ashes to ashes, butt to butt. All right, what is our score at the end of this round, Helen?
At the end of that round, John Roderick has a half a point and Mujan Zulfagari has 0 points.
All right, but those scores are bound to change as we move on to questions about topics our guests have chosen for themselves. That's all up ahead, and we come back on Go Fact Yourself. Hey, everybody, it's Jay Keith again. And?
Helen Hong.
That's right. Hey, we got a great comment about the Max Fun Drive from one of our listeners. Daniel Curry said, "It's Max Fun Drive. I joined to support JJ Go, Judge John Hodgman, and Go Factor Pod." That's us. These shows keep me laughing and thinking. What more can you ask for? Wow. What more can we ask for than to have wonderful support from folks like Daniel? Thank you so much.
Thank you, Daniel. We have heard from a lot of people who appreciate our podcast, especially during this time of social distancing. It has been hard on all of us, but having familiar voices like ours, we hope, make you laugh, think, interact, and feel normal. It's extremely important to a lot of folks. So if this sounds like you and you're able to join, I hope you can.
Now, how to join? It's pretty easy. You go to MaximumFun.org/join to become a member of Maximum Fun. Memberships at Max Fun start at only $5 a month, and that gets you so much bonus content as well. You're going to be able to access that as long as you're a member, and there's a whole lot of it already waiting for you right now, including a bonus episode that we produced back in March that features a lot of our previous guests talking about what it meant to them to meet some wonderful experts. Who do we have on that episode, Helen?
Well, Emily Heller got to meet her hero, the Indigo Girls, because of our podcast, which is, come on now.
That was really cool, yeah. And she came on and talked about what that experience was like. And we had, Ross Blotcher from Oh No, Ross and Carrie left us a lovely message. We talked to Jamie Loftus. That is available right now on the Max Fun bonus content feed. And now, if you choose to join at $10 a month, you get a cool pin and the bonus content. And speaking of cool pins, we have a pretty cool pin here at Go Fact Yourself. Have you seen this, Helen?
I have. It is very cool. I mean, I always enjoy the pins that come out every year, but this year's is very, very cool. I really dig it.
I won't say that I designed the pin. I will say that, Helen, you've seen my handwriting. If my handwriting is that bad, imagine what my drawing must look like. and yet this wonderful artist took that and turned it into this amazing pin that was exactly what I had in mind. It's a pin that says GFY Facting Champion, because we talk about the winner of our show becoming the Go Fact Yourself Facting Champion. And it looks like one of those championship pins that you would get from some sort of a sporting event. I'm really excited with how it turned out.
And thank you for not using Jay Keith's handwriting, because it really is. really is.
I don't know if that's a font. I don't know what it is. But anyway, you can choose our pin or any of the pins from the Max Fun universe if you choose to join at the $10 a month level. And if you join at $20 a month or more, there's even more special gifts and game packs and all that kind of stuff. Whatever you want to do, we're grateful for
it. We have swag, and we will give it to you for any amount of money, actually. So
yes,
$5 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month gets you different levels, varying levels of swag. Yeah, and we are very proud to be able to offer Go Fact Yourself for free to our listeners, but it's obviously not free to make.
Yeah, especially during the pandemic time. Believe it or not, when we're doing these remote episodes with people in different parts of the country, recording over Zoom and recording themselves locally, it actually creates a lot of extra work for our team, by which I mostly mean our associate producer and editor, Julian, who is smiling right now as we say his name. We're very grateful to have Julian. So please, if you can, support us with any amount by going to MaximumFun.org/join, and then let us know on Twitter that you supported us, and we'll get you that picture of either Dodger, muffin, or a cookie. And now, more of Go Fact Yourself.
Welcome back to Go Fact Yourself, where our score is John Roderick with half a point and Mujan Zulfagari with 0 points. Once again, here's J. Keith Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. John Roderick, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about muscle cars, the GMC RV, and Judas Priest's album British Steel and Screaming for Vengeance. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, you said you know a lot about muscle cars.
Yes, I was almost 100% lying when I said I know anything about muscle cars.
What is it that you like about muscle cars, though?
I'm 51 years old, and so when I was in high school, all the stoners and pot dealers drove what now are really cool, expensive, like rad muscle cars, and what then were just the cars that stoners and pot dealers drove. And so as a teen, I imprinted on Camaros and Novas because as a teen, and I grew up in Alaska, as a teen, you know, you're just trying to find something. So muscle cars became a thing that I taught myself a lot about, just like vintage guitars and all these things that no one cares about anymore, and it doesn't help me at all to know about.
Oh, except perhaps on this show.
Except on this show. Yeah.
By the way, in Alaska, the Nova is considered a muscle car.
That's right. All right. It was. The 72 Nova was a muscle car.
All right, John, you also said you know a lot about the GMC RV.
Now that, I think if you took a survey of all the people in America that are under the age of 90... Mm-hmm. who know about the GMC RV, I'm probably, in the top 20.
Wow.
Okay, now for those who only are hearing five letters and do not understand the context, what is or was the GMC RV?
So very briefly, in the mid-70s, the General Motors Corporation, which is the Chevrolet and GM, they decided that they were going to custom build an RV, like a Winnebago,
A recreational vehicle.
But they were going to use all their most space age technology. It was going to be like their signature vehicle, a platform where they could just show the world what a motorized vehicle could be. And so they came out with this RV that basically cost like if you were buying a yacht. and then all of a sudden gas went from 30 cents a gallon to $15 a gallon or whatever it was in 1975 prices. So this RV became they only made it for a few years. It became this strange vehicle that you would not recognize if it weren't the star of the movie Stripes featuring Bill Murray.
Oh, that was theirs.
That's the GMC RV.
The GMC RV. Okay. Yeah. And very briefly, what about the GMC RV appeals to you? Did you ever get to have one or ride in one?
So I did. At a certain point, several years ago, I decided that what I was going to do was join RV culture. I bought a GMC RV, and I attempted to drive it across America. It only caught on fire a handful of times.
What?
and I joined unwittingly this subculture of retired RV motorhead space race people.
Wow.
This group of enthusiasts has an underground network that's nationwide. And every time my RV caught on fire or broke down in some way, I would go on their secret network and there would always be someone within 5 miles of where I broke down
And by secret underground network, I assume you mean AOL.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Dial up. Yeah.
And finally, John, you said you know a lot about Judas Priest's albums, British Steel and Screaming for Vengeance.
Well, these records, I feel like, were the kind of peak of a certain kind of British heavy metal that after these records, heavy metal just went right in the crapper. It became hair metal and stuff that none of us liked. And then it balkanized and splintered into the thousand kinds of metal that live in the world today. Mm-hmm. And yet prior to British Steel, you couldn't really say what metal was. Was Black Sabbath metal? Was AC/DC metal? You couldn't say that those things were metal exactly. Is Led Zeppelin metal? Not really. But when British Steel came out, suddenly we knew what we meant when we said metal. This was metal. Judas Priest's British Steel. And then right around then, you've got Iron Maiden. You've got, you know, you've got bands that there's nothing you could call these bands except metal. After that, you know, who knows what metal is?
Who knows anymore? All right, well, to summarize, John, you told us you know a lot about Muscle Cars, the GMC RV, and Judas Priest albums British Steel and Screaming for Vengeance. Today we're going to quiz you about Muscle Cars.
Oh, no! Muscle Cars!
You told us it was one of the things you knew about.
Okay, well.
You love it, and I'm sure that love will show in this quiz.
I don't have to run faster than the bear. I just have to run faster than my friend.
Exactly. Right. John, do you have a dream car? Is there a muscle car that you've always wanted to have or that you have had?
One of the, I think the saddest things about this love of muscle cars I have is that I've never owned a muscle car. I have never once just gone ahead and bought an old muscle car or even bought a car that had any muscle at all.
Well, you were too busy tooling around in this RV that you had to get fixed.
That's right. I mean, but the car that I've always wanted is a 1965 Pontiac GTO convertible. Mm. I feel like it's the sexiest of all cars, and yet I'm a podcaster, so I can't afford a good one.
Yet more reason to contribute to the Max Fun Drive. Let's get John a muscle car. All right, well, just ahead, John, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic to test your mastery in this subject with an expert-level question worth up to 3 points.
Oh, dear.
But before that, to let you show your love, here are 5 trivia questions about the topic, each worth 1 point. Now, if you want it, you're allowed a hint for any 2 of these 5 questions. Now, Mujan, listen closely, because if John answers incorrectly, you can steal. Mujan, by the way, how much do you know about muscle cars?
You know, I've seen at least one in my life, so...
All right, John, better not give her a chance. She's ready to pounce.
Yep, number 104.
All right. All right, John, here's question number 1 for you about muscle cars.
All right, here we go.
Though many people think of muscle cars as a thing of the past, Ford, Chevrolet, and Dodge each make a model of muscle car that continue to sell well, with over 180,000 units sold last year. Name one of these 3 best-selling models.
The Ford Mustang.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct, the Ford Mustang. Mustang, by the way, continues to be number 1, but Challenger has passed Camaro as the number 2 selling muscle car. By the way, for our listeners, we did an entire segment about classic Mustangs with guest Greg Fitzsimmons on episode 31 of Go Fact Yourself.
Oh, isn't that?
All right, John, you're on the board with a point there. Here's question number 2.
Okay.
You will often hear of a muscle car having a Hemi engine. What does Hemi mean?
Well, it's the hemispheric... place within the piston, the top, let's see, where the piston hits the top of its arc.
Just say hemispherical.
What does hemispherical mean? Yeah, Hemi means hemispherical. I'm trying to describe the motor, and I'm
okay. That is correct. I couldn't watch it twist any longer.
It's just like,
yes, that is correct for the point.
Whoever the expert is, they're just rolling their eyes at me.
Hemi means it's in the combustion chamber, that it's hemispherical, or it usually has a dome shape that is hemispherical. Fun fact, while the Hemi name is usually associated with Chrysler products, the hemispherical combustion chamber can be found in many high-end performance engines from Jaguar to Porsche. Or to Porsche. John, you've gotten 2 already. Here's question number 3, and I think it's something you might know about. Many consider the Pontiac GTO to be the first real muscle car.
Yay.
It even inspired a top 5 hit song called GTO, probably better known as Little GTO, and was named a Motor Trend Car of the Year. John is raising and lowering his arms in triumph already. He doesn't even know the question.
John. I'm going to get this
what
wrong.
What does GTO stand for?
Grand Touring
You do have a hint available if you'd like to use the hint.
Oh, okay, let's hear the hint.
Okay, Helen, how about that first hint?
It's Italian for homologated grand touring.
Right. So it's the word homologated in Italian that I was missing because I got the grand touring part.
Mm-hmm.
Grand touring.
It's an O, but it has to do with homologated.
Right. So it means organazioni. Organizzazioni.
Is it grand touring organizzazioni?
It is not.
Dang. No, I'm terribly sorry, but that does sound delicious. Yeah, Mujan with a chance to steal.
Grand touring Orgarino.
Orgarino.
Helen, is it Grand Touring or Maglino?
Oh, I like the spin that you put on it, but no, it's not.
No, I'm terribly sorry. You were close, John. It's Gran Turismo.
Yeah.
Omologato.
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 By the way, of course, we all know that homologated means approved for competition, right. As in John and Mujan have been homologated for this episode of Go Fact Yourself.
Oh, that sounds dirtier than it should.
Grazie mille.
Grazie mille. All right, John, no point there, but let's see if you can bounce back with question number four.
Okay.
In 1966, famed car designer Carroll Shelby had 1,001 special racing Mustangs built so that they could be rented out to people who wanted to race them on weekends. What car rental company offered this rent-a-racer program?
Hertz, the Hertz
Helen?
Company.
That is correct.
That is correct, Hertz. Hertz, by the way, continued its muscle car rental program as part of its adrenaline collection. They recently filed for bankruptcy. All right, you got the point there. Let's see how you can do with question number five. You still have one hint available.
Oh, good, good.
John, when Chevy first introduced the Camaro in the late 1960s, some found it was a little underpowered. So a dealership in Pennsylvania modified some of them by removing the engines and replacing them with more powerful Corvette engines. What is that dealership which gave its name to these legendary modified Camaros?
Yanko.
Helen?
That is correct.
He didn't need that hand. Congratulations, John. That is correct. Ugh. It is Yanko.
I'm such a boomer. I'm a boomer in disguise.
You're a boomer. Yes. Well, you did more than okay, boomer. You did quite well in that round. But now here is your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. John, Hollywood has long been influenced by muscle cars from Fast and Furious to Mad Max to Joe Dirt, or Joe Soil. But sometimes muscle cars are influenced by Hollywood. For up to 3 points, identify these three cars that are named for fictional characters from Hollywood. First, a Plymouth named for an animated animal. Second, a Pontiac named for a character from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, sometimes played by Sammy Davis Jr. And third, a Ford named for the title character from a 1968 movie.
Okay, what was the first one?
First one, a Plymouth named for an animated animal.
The Roadrunner.
Okay, his answer for that. Second, the Pontiac named for a character from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, often played by Sammy Davis Jr.
Pontiac Sunbird.
The Pontiac Sunbird, okay. And finally, the Ford named for the title character from a 1968 movie.
The Torino.
Torino. All right, Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have?
Joining us tonight is a car builder, writer, and the editor of Street Muscle Magazine. It's Vinny Costa.
Hello, Mr. Costa.
Wow.
What's going on, everybody? Please don't call me Mr. Costa. It's Vinny.
All right. Vinny, you sound like you may be of Italian heritage, so I want to apologize in advance for all of the
omologato.
That's extra pronunciation. Good job, guys.
Yes, we thank you for not hanging up and reporting us to the authorities. In addition to being the editor of Street Muscle Magazine, you also are the editor of Rod Authority, which covers hot rods. How do hot rods differ from muscle cars?
Typically, when I'm explaining it to non-car people, it's like 30s, 40s, 50s cars fall under the hot rod banner, and 60s, 70s, and now 80s cars fall under the muscle car banner.
How did you get into muscle cars? I understand you got into it at a young age.
Yeah. One day, my dad was 9 years old. He brought home a father and son project. It's a 68 Pontiac Firebird. I still own it today, and it's actually one of the project cars on Street Muscle Magazine.
Your dad home a car for you and him to fix together when you were nine?
Yeah.
Stop it.
And you're still fixing it now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's pretty much done if you were to look at it, but they're always changing.
You have a few other muscle cars in your collection. Tell us about those, too.
Yeah. So I got a 72 Monte Carlo, a 71 El Camino, 70 Mustang Fastback, a 2010 Camaro SS, and, you know, I'm sure there will be many more in the future.
What's the car that you take down to the grocery store when you need some eggs?
I daily drove the Firebird for 3 or 4 years while I was putting myself through college. So, yeah.
Wow. That one's my favorite. And you would leave it in, like, the Kroger parking lot as you...
Cars are meant to be driven.
Damn. Good man. That's so cool.
Well, what's neat is that you actually use the cars that you own in the magazine. You share sort of how with their history and how you build on that. Tell us about that, sort of what the focus of the magazine is, because it's not just classic cars. It's also new tech.
That's true. Yeah, so you touched on it with your first question, but, you know, late model cars are also considered muscle nowadays. And so each project car that we have on the magazine caters to a different market segment within the muscle car community. Some guys want to go drag racing, some guys want to go and race around a road course, and some guys just want a cruiser on the weekends. And so we try to cater to everybody in the magazine.
And you say some guys, but I imagine there are some female muscle car enthusiasts as well?
No, certainly. Yeah. We have a huge a female fan base on our Facebook page, which is our largest group of fans. And they're very active in the community.
So I'm assuming for especially the older cars, there's only a set number of parts that exist in the world, right? So it's just a constant, like, trading for parts or, like, salvaging for parts? Or is it actually, like, changing parts so that you can use newer parts in these older cars?
Yeah, you know, the aftermarket has really started to cater to those groups where it was difficult to get those parts. And so now you can buy off-the-shelf items that are reproduced. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, especially with the older cars in the hot rod community, they're so obscure that you have to hunt at swap meets and, you know, trading posts. So, yeah, it can be difficult.
Do you think we'll ever see an electric muscle car or a hybrid muscle car? Could that even exist?
100%, man. We are in the age of horsepower.
Tell that to my Prius.
Prius is kind of a hot car, actually.
Come on. Well, my Prius goes from 0 to 60 in 6 minutes. Like, it literally, I'm like, come on.
Humble beginnings, that's for sure, the electric car community. But Mr. Musk has done a service to us all, because to your point, yeah, there already are quote unquote electric muscle cars. And I might get killed for saying that by my fans. But yeah, so last year at SEMA, which is the biggest automotive trade show in the world, pretty much, there was an all-electric Mustang. There was also an all-electric Camaro. So yeah, I think the big three auto manufacturers are listening to what the people need and want.
Wow. That's really cool. But do they still make the noises, though?
No, unfortunately.
You have to go back to being a kid and just go ring.
Because I think that's part of the beauty of, like, that's part of the attraction of having a muscle car. But if it's electric and it's like,
that's the argument.
It's like,
yeah.
That's the argument that a lot of people make, that, you know, it's kind of stealing the soul from, quote unquote, the muscle car. But actually, I believe that the Mustang has a feature that plays through the speakers on the inside of the car.
No. And it goes vroom, vroom.
Yeah.
Vroom,
yeah. Basically. Yeah.
Or you could just put a baseball card in the spokes.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And then very quickly, tell us about the podcast that you do that's all about this world as well.
Yeah, so every Friday at noon Pacific time, my co-host Greg Acosta, he's the editor of Engine Labs, one of my sister titles. We get together and we have people from all walks of life, builders, manufacturers, editors on the show, and we talk about all things automotive. It's called The Rodcast. Again, you can tune in and watch it every Friday at noon.
That's great. All right, well, let's get to the reason that we brought you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked of John. First, we wanted to know, what was the Plymouth that was named for an animated animal from Hollywood? Helen, what did John say?
John said Roadrunner.
And Vinny?
That is correct.
That is correct. A point for John.
I think that's the only one I got. I think the other two. I'm pretty sure Sammy Davis Jr. did not play a character called Sunbird. on the Ronan Martin show.
That. Okay. A little fun fact about that Roadrunner one. Plymouth actually paid Warner Brothers $50,000 to use the Roadrunner decals, and it also had a special horn that went, meep, meep.
No.
Have you seen that in action, Vinny?
Yes, I have. I've actually done a few features on cars, and they let me press the button.
No,
oh,
and
awesome.
It goes, meep, meep.
Yeah.
No.
It really does? I've never heard that before.
Well, I think you got a new dream car, John. All right, so the point there for John. Let's go to your second question. We asked John, what was the Pontiac model that was named for a character from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In that was sometimes played by Sammy Davis Jr.? Helen, what did John say that he is pretty sure is wrong?
John said Sunbird.
And Vinny?
John, you were doing so well, man.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, I know.
Yeah, no, that is not correct. It's actually the GTO Judge.
The Judge.
Oh, the Judge. Oh, ouch.
The song in the sketch from Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In that people might remember is Here Comes
the
Judge. The court's
judge.
In session, Here Comes the Judge.
Sure.
And they literally named a car model for that sketch. All right, no point there, but fun to learn. And finally, we wanted to know, what was the Ford that was named for a title character from a 1968 movie? Helen, what did John say?
John said the Torino.
The Torino. And Vinny, is that correct?
That is incorrect.
No, I'm sorry, John. I think if you had thought about it a little more, you might have gotten it. Vinny, what is the correct answer?
It's actually Bullet.
What car is called the Bullet?
It's a Mustang. It's actually the Mustang Bullet, and it was a special edition that they made in 2003, 2008, and just recently, I think 2016.
Like it's a new Mustang, but it's painted green, and it can jump down.
So you know the movie. Yes.
You can get it in
and,
the air when you're being chased by by a charger. Yeah,
and it comes with Ally McGraw in the passenger seat. Yes, no, that's of course a reference to the Steve McQueen movie from 1968.
I'm completely oblivious to the fact that that Ford did that. I mean, I don't know how it missed me, but.
That's right. That definitely was a little tricky.
It's a great movie.
All right, John, you still did pretty well. Is there anything you'd like to ask or say to our expert while we have him here?
Well, you know, I would love to collaborate with you sometime on a custom 65 GTO. If you ever get like an old wreck in there and you want somebody to like help you envision it.
John, you'll be the first person I call.
Right. Vinny, if people want to find out more about you or your work, where can they go?
Check out streetmusclemag.com, check out rodauthority.com, and of course, give us a follow on Facebook, and check it out.
Excellent. Well, we're so glad that you stopped by. Thanks so much, Vinny Costa.
It was great meeting you, Vinny. Thank you.
You too. Bye. Everybody take care.
Thank you.
All right. Helen, what is our score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, John Roderick has 5.5 points, and Mujan Zulfagari has 0 points, with a round of questions from Mujan coming up.
That's right. We're going to talk with Mujan about a topic she knows about. Plus, later, John and Mujan will go head-to-head in our Fast Facts round, all to find a winner on Go Fact Yourself.
Hi, I'm Dave.
Hi, I'm Graham.
And we're two house DJs who have been trapped inside our drum machine.
We love it here, and we'd love if you stopped by and visited us every week on Stop Podcasting Yourself
here on MaximumFun.org.
We're just a couple of doofuses from Canada.
And listen to our show or perish. Stop Podcasting Yourself
on MaximumFun.org.
To Go Fact Yourself, where our score is John Roderick with 5.5 points and Mujan Zulfagari with 0 points. Once again, here's J.K. Van Stratton.
Thank you, Helen. All right, Mujan, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about celebrity relationships and divorces, Farsi phrases, and the movie Gremlins. Let's find out a little bit more about each of those. First, you said you know a lot about celebrity relationships and divorces.
Yes, it's not necessarily something I seek, you know. I like to think of myself as a worldly person who listens to NPR, New York Times, and Vox. But like, since I was young, I've been following this one news site. Oh No They Didn't on LiveJournal, which still exists.
Yes.
And it's still vibrant.
Wow.
And it's my number two thing I go to in the morning. So even if I don't want to know, I've for the past 2 decades have at least been keeping on. You know, up to speed on who's doing who and what's happening in the world. Very important in these days.
That is a very wide range of people. Like, celebrity relationships mm-hmm. and divorces encompasses, like, musicians, actors.
Yeah.
Like, just, there's a lot of people that are encapsulated, and you keep up with all of them.
Well, it's not that I necessarily keep up. It's just it's there and it sometimes seeps into my brain. Mm. You know, back in the day when we used to do trivia, that was the one that I'd be that person at the table, be like, that's what I know.
Got it.
And then, of course, it was geography. And I'd be like, God damn it.
You also said you know a lot about Farsi phrases.
Yes. Well, I guess this is very personal to me because I know Farsi. Mm-hmm. And so I said I know Farsi phrases. It's my first language, although I definitely get made fun of by other Iranians for having a very thick American accent.
Interesting. Can you give us an example of what something somebody might pronounce with an Iranian accent versus an American accent?
Well, you know, Iranians are very melodic. They speak in a very melodic tone, like... Khodafes, khubi, and I'm just like Khodafes, khubi.
So not just American, but Southern.
Yes. Yeah.
What are some of your favorite phrases in Farsi, either because of how they sound or what they mean? Maybe we don't have them
in
American.
Sure, it's generally the swear words because they aren't necessarily swear words. They're very strange sentences, like Khakru Sadit, which means dirt on your head, which is like, it basically means like damn you or F you.
By the way, I like how you combined both of our what's the difference topics in that phrase, dirt and soil, and then profanity.
I know. And I knew neither of them, so.
And finally, Mujan, you said you know a lot about the movie Gremlins.
Yeah, I mean, about a year and a half ago, I watched the movie for the first time in my entire life.
Oh, wow.
I know, I didn't grow up with it. I think I was too much of a scared kid to watch Gremlins. But I just fell in love with that adorable creature, Gizmo, who is also, you know, the death destroyer of all worlds, in a way. He's
and,
cute.
And you related to a cute death destroyer?
Yeah, you know, he's complicated. There's a lot going on. If there's water on him, monsters will come out of him. But it's like the first time in many years I got so committed to one character or a project or something or a show that I bought merch. And I never buy merch.
What kind of merch did you get?
Right now I have a Gizmo, like, animatronic doll in the back of my car.
No.
Who, if you turn on, he kind of does the sad Gizmo song.
Stop
that Gizmo
it.
Does.
You have, you have, like, a moving, talking Gizmo in your car?
Yeah. But what's horrifying is the fact that I haven't turned it on in a very long time, and it's been in the back of my car facing, you know, the outside, and the sun has caused its neck to turn yellow.
Oh, no.
The neck that rotates has became like boiled in for some reason. So now it doesn't move its neck anymore. But it's adorable.
Oh, she says until it comes to kill her.
That's in the movie, right? Like, don't get water on it, and also don't leave it in the back of your car.
Yeah, don't leave it in the back of your car.
That's right. Well, it is bright light. So to summarize, Mujan, of your many interests, you told us you know a lot about celebrity relationships and divorces, Farsi phrases, and the movie Gremlins. Today we're going to quiz you about the movie Gremlins.
Yay!
Now, Mujan, you mentioned that you have this Gizmo doll in your car that sings the sad Gremlin song. Can you give us a few bars of that? What does that sound like?
Oh, boy. Na, 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 na.
Oh, no. Yeah, well, no wonder. Who wouldn't want to drive around to the sound of that? do you have a favorite scene or favorite line from the movie Gremlins?
Oh, just anytime Gizmo in the first movie is watching television and he just cuddled up. It's just any scene Gizmo's being adorable, guys. Oh, the first time he looks Gizmo in the eye, or when Gizmo sings his song.
Aw, lovely.
Aww. So cute.
Well, oh, you do a good Gizmo.
You do a very good Gizmo.
Gizmo. Yeah, thank you very much, guys. He's so cute. Again, evil does come from him. I'm very aware.
Right. But let's focus on the cuteness for now.
Yeah.
All right. Well, just ahead, Mujan, we're going to enlist the help of a bona fide expert in your topic with our three-part question. But before that, to give you a chance to show off, here are five trivia questions about the movie Gremlins, each worth 1 point. Now, if you want it, you're allowed a total of 2 hints for these 5 questions. Now, John, do listen closely because you can steal if Mujan gets any wrong. John, by the way, how much do you know about the movie Gremlins?
Gremlins came out when I was 16 years old. And I already felt that it was a kid's movie and I was too old and sophisticated to watch a movie about little things. Although I was a huge Phoebe Cates fan from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. But Gremlins completely missed me. And the other day, my 9-year-old daughter said that she wanted to watch Gremlins. And I said, I don't know, Gremlins? Really? Are you sure you don't?
If you were too cool at 16, then it, you know.
Sure you don't want to watch Bad News Bears? And she was like, no, I want to watch Gremlins. So I could have watched it 2 days ago. And I would be just ready to steal here, but as it goes, I just am. I'm not a Gremlins expert.
All right, Mujan, it sounds like this is your quiz to lose.
Well, we'll see. All right.
We'll see. Here we go. Your first question about the movie Gremlins. According to the grandson of the owner of a peculiar shop in Chinatown, gremlins come with three rules, all of which somehow get broken in the movie. Name one of these three rules.
Don't feed them after midnight.
Helen?
That is,
of course, correct. The other, don't expose them to bright light, and don't get them wet. Fun fact, that shop owner was played by the great Key Luke, who became famous first in the 1930s, playing the son of Charlie Chan in a series of movies where Charlie Chan was played by a white guy from Sweden. Later, he provided the voice of Charlie Chan in the 1972 Saturday morning cartoon The Amazing Chan and the Chan Clan, making him the first Asian actor ever to play Charlie Chan. Representation matters, people. That's all I'm saying. All right, here we go. Question number two. What comedian, actor, and talent show judge provided the
Howie
voice
Mandel.
Of...
Oh, I knew that one.
That is correct.
Provided the voice of Gizmo. Fun fact, Howie Mandel has said in interviews that the voice of Gizmo is the same voice he used for Skeeter in Muppet Babies, to bring it back to the Muppets, and Bobby in Bobby's World. Hey, if you can do one thing well,
yeah.
Why not? All right, you're two.
I mean, how does he make his voice so cute?
Bobby, you gotta bring it up like this somehow.
Oh.
Just like that. All right, you're two for two, Mujan. Here's question number three. Billy's dad, Rand Peltzer, fancies himself an inventor. Name two of the inventions we see in the movie branded with the Peltzer name.
Oh, sure. One is an ashtray that's broken. It doesn't work.
Okay.
Is that one of them? And then the other one is an orange juicer. It's an orange juice maker that just spurts out just like tar for some reason.
Helen?
That is correct.
Yes. The orange juicer, the smokeless ashtray, which was featured toward the end of the movie. Also the bathroom buddy. Then there was an egg cracker, a coffee maker, and a mixer and blender. Fun fact, we also see a remote control light dimmer and a phone answerer, an electric hammer, a power fly swatter, a power card shuffler, but none of those had the Peltzer brand as those did. All right, Mujan, you were three for three. Here's question number four. You do still have two hints available. In addition to its main cast, Gremlins features appearances from actors who we associate more with memorable roles on memorable TV shows. But which one of the following people is not in the cast of Gremlins? Is it the actor who plays Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, Flo from the sitcoms Alice and Flo, the Doctor from Star Trek Voyager, the Mayor from The Wire, or Heather, the daughter from Mr. Belvedere?
Oh, I might need a clue for this one.
Okay, well, do you want to sound it out a little bit first?
Sure. So the first one, I know Mike, he plays a deputy in it, and he's in Better Call Saul. For the rest of them, I don't know. I think the guy from Voyager might be in it, but oh no, I think I was too focused on Gizmo that I really haven't focused on the humans.
What are all these humans doing in the way of my beautiful Gizmo? All right, Helen, how about that first hint?
The mayor from The Wire was in the movie.
Okay. Can you repeat again?
I can. So Mike Ehrmantraut from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, Flo from the sitcoms Alice and Flo, the Doctor from Star Trek Voyager. We now know that the mayor from The Wire was in the movie. And then Heather, the daughter from Mr. Belvedere.
Heather, the daughter from Mr. Belvedere?
Helen?
That is not correct.
No!
No, I'm terribly sorry. John Roderick with a chance to steal.
I'm going to say it's the Doctor from Star Trek Voyager.
Helen?
That is correct.
That is correct. Congratulations, John. There's a bit of a tricky question because the Doctor from Star Trek Voyager is played by Robert Picardo, who is in a lot of movies by this director and, in fact, is in Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
Oh.
Just to clarify for our listeners, Jonathan Banks plays Mike Ehrmantraut on Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. He plays the police deputy, as Mujan mentioned. Polly Holiday, who played Flo, plays Mrs. Deagle, one of the main villains in the movie. Glenn Turman, who played Mayor Royce on The Wire, plays the teacher. And Tracy Wells from Mr. Belvedere plays one of his students. All right, very tricky question, a very good steal from John Roderick. Mujan, let's see if you can bounce back with question number five. While wreaking havoc, the Gremlins play a miniature version of what popular 1980s arcade game?
Oh,
you do have a hint available if you'd like to use
a
that
hint,
second
please.
Hint.
Helen,
how about
is,
that
yeah.
second hint?
Second hint.
The opening music to the arcade version of this game sounds like this. Do 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 do
Right. Okay. So.
Excellent hint, Helen.
That was a good hint.
So it has to be something in the 80s that was big, that an arcade. Pac-Man?
Helen, is it Pac-Man?
It is not Pac-Man.
No, right. I'm terribly sorry. Right. John, with a chance to steal.
Helen's rendition of the song was so good that I knew it instantly because I'm old. It is Donkey Kong.
Helen?
That is right. Correct.
That is correct for another successful steal from John.
I'm sorry, Mujan.
That's all right. You still did pretty well in that round. But now, Mujan, here's your expert level question that requires multiple answers. It is time for your cluster fact. We'll be bringing on an expert to assess your response. One of the great things about Gremlins is that it crosses so many genres: comedy, fantasy, action, Christmas, science fiction, and even horror. In fact, at the 1984 Saturn Awards, presented annually by the Academy of Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Horror Films, Gremlins won the award for Best Horror Film, beating out A Nightmare on Elm Street, among others. The movie won four other Saturn Awards that year for Best Supporting Actress, Best Music, Best Special Effects, and Best Director. For up to 3 points, name three of the people who won these awards.
Best Supporting, Phoebe Cates.
Okay.
Best Director, Joe Dante.
Okay.
And then could you repeat the other ones?
The others were either Best Music or Best Special Effects.
I'm going to go with, he didn't do this, but I'm just going to guess, John Williams.
John Williams. All right. Helen is taking note of those answers. We have an expert on hand who can tell us for sure. Helen, who do we have tonight?
Joining us tonight is an award-winning director and producer who directed the movie Gremlins. It's
what?
Joe Dante.
Oh, my gosh. This is insane.
I've learned so much about muscle cars tonight.
Thank you so much for joining us. What an honor.
Well, thank you.
Well, in addition, of course, to Gremlins, you're the director of Gremlins 2, Inner Space, The Howling, The Burbs, Small Soldiers, hundreds of TV episodes. It's quite an honor and a treat to have you. I was interested in learning that you actually got your start in movies cutting trailers for Roger Corman.
Trailers are a great way to learn how to make movies because you have to take a whole movie and compress it down to 3 minutes, and you get to look at all the different ways in which scenes can be recut. And, you know, a lot of trailer editors have actually gone on to become directors.
That's great. You had quite a variety of material that you were making trailers for. You would do sort of these grindhouse type films, and then you would also do trailers for Fellini pictures.
Well, Corman was releasing a lot of drive-in movies, and he was also one of the few people who was still running foreign films because the big studios had decided not to do it. So I did the trailer for Amarcord and Small Change, and I met Truffaut and I met Fellini, and it was like, it was a great time, you know, and I'm just some kid from New Jersey, you know, what do I know?
And does the approach change depending if you're doing a Fellini movie or a sort of a more exploitative film?
Well, if you're doing a good movie with good photography and good scenes, you can do a better trailer. But when you do a low budget movie, you have to disguise the low budget. And you have to sort of fake things. We had an exploding helicopter that we used to cut to. Whenever the trailer got dull, we would put the exploding helicopter in it, whether it was in the movie or not.
And speaking of trailers, you run a site called Trailers from Hell, which is so wonderful. It's such a great way to study and learn about movies, and also very entertaining. And the mechanism that you use, for people who don't know, is you do movie commentary via the trailer for those movies.
Well, we try to find contemporary filmmakers that audiences can relate to who talk about movies that maybe some of the younger people might not have been able to be exposed to. When I was a kid, old movies were everywhere. And now it's much harder to see those kind of things. And so on our website, we have a lot of contemporary filmmakers talking about movies that meant something to them or analyzing movies that they think people should know about. And that's led to also our podcast, The Movies That Made Me, which is also geared at trying to get people to be familiar with movies they might not otherwise encounter.
You started with seven trailers and people explaining what they love about those movies. How many trailers do you have now on Trailers from Hell?
We have almost, I can't believe it, but almost 2,000 trailers.
Wow.
You also include reviews that you had written when you worked for Film Bulletin in the late 60s and early 70s. What is it like to reread reviews that you wrote back then?
Well, it's a little embarrassing because when you're not a filmmaker, and you could be very critical of movies that you see. And when I look back as a filmmaker to some of the things that I said about other people's movies, I think, boy, you know, if I knew then what I know now, I never would have been so glib about, you know, how it's hard to make a movie. It's hard to make even a bad movie. You know, if a movie is good, you know, it's great. But, you know, just to make a picture and get it done and get it released is a huge achievement. You know, I am working on a new Gremlins animated series.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Which I just learned in the last couple of days that Howie Mandel is no longer doing the voice of Gizmo.
Oh, interesting.
Having just listened to this podcast, I now see that there is a perfect contender to be able to replace him.
Oh my God!
I am ready. I'm available whenever you want.
Mujan, I
have no writers. I'm very easy. I'll do it for low money.
Mujan,
it doesn't matter.
We are going to be expecting our cut.
We were there.
I'm just non-union. Like, it doesn't matter. I'm so happy.
Our agency fee is a steep.
Although Helen, I should say, Mujan, I don't know if that's the best negotiating tactic that you're starting with.
You can pay me in dirt or soil. It doesn't matter.
Well, that's a very nice compliment, Mr. Dante. Tell us about this animated series and how you're being involved with it.
Well, it's, you know, for a long time they were trying to come up with a reason to make Gremlins 3, and the people at the studio hated Gremlins 2 so much that they really couldn't figure out a way to make another one, and they didn't. Frankly, they weren't too crazy about Gremlins 1 either. But Gremlins 2 was sort of designed to be like, well, go ahead and top this. Go ahead and try to find something that's crazier than this. And so instead of trying to do that, they wisely, I think, went back into a prequel mode to say, okay, well, how did this Mogwai thing happen? You know, what was the story? How did this old Chinese guy encounter this Gizmo character? And which, of course, takes you back to 1920s Shanghai. So it's an animated series, and it's a lot of people who love the movie are working on it, and I've been consulting on it, and I think it looks great. It's going to be on HBO. I can't HBO Plus, HBO Max. I don't know what the hell these things are, but it's probably won't be out until next year. But it's everything I've seen looks very promising, and I think it's a really smart way to revive the franchise because they've been trying with no success for the past 10 years to come up with a reason to make another movie, and there really isn't one except to make money. So this is, I think, a really good way to get back into that franchise.
Well, speaking of animation, what's amazing rewatching Gremlins, as I did the other day, is that this was before CGI.
Was it ever?
You know, you heard the emotional resonance that this movie, and especially Gizmo, had for Mujan, and those are just puppets.
Well, I know. That's what's remarkable is that Mujan saw it, like, what is it, 30, 35 years after the movie was made?
Yeah.
And, you know, if the movie was made today, they would use none of those techniques because they're all obsolete now. It's all puppetry. And it was extremely daunting to try to be able to make that movie with the technology that existed because we had to keep inventing. Well, it'd be in the script. Gizmo does this. No, he can't do that. How about if he does this? No, he can't do that either. How about he walks from here to here? No, he can't do that either. So we have to put on a backpack and put him on the kid's shoulder. And the original script had Gizmo turning into Stripe the Bad Gremlin after half an hour. And that meant there was just nothing but bad gremlins for the whole second half of the movie. And Spielberg, and I think the genius decision that made the picture successful enough to still be popular, he said, no, now that I've seen the Gizmo design, I like him. I don't want him to turn into a bad gremlin. I want him to be the kid's pal. And essentially turned it into a boy and his dog movie with a boy and his Mogwai.
Wow.
Except the problem we had was that, you know, the technology was so primitive that we were suddenly faced with the idea of taking this very small puppet and trying to make it into a character that could last for an entire movie. And it was an amazingly difficult challenge.
And where are the actual gremlins nowadays?
I mean, I have a couple of them in my back room, but the rubber just sort of falls apart. Because we couldn't use any of the original Gremlins in the Gremlins 2 because too much time had elapsed.
Really? Aww. Even in just those few years?
No, and also Rick Baker redesigned them a little bit. So they didn't really quite look like the original Gremlins. But there's all these toys out from NECA, this Japanese company that does these figurines and stuff. and some of them are amazingly accurate and good. I mean, originally Hasbro was quickly hired to do merchandising for the show after the Warner Brothers executives saw the Gizmo footage of him coming out of the box. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty lukewarm on the movie until they saw that shot. And then they went, holy shit, we can actually, you know, we can merchandise this thing. And so they had to go full court press to get a lot of toys out quickly. And some of them, frankly, weren't really very well made. Mm. But in recent years, the quality has been impeccable. And I go to these, you know, autograph shows and stuff like that, and people bring me these life-size puppets that are made, I guess, in Japan, and although I don't know who makes them, and they're as good or better than the ones that we were using for the movie.
Wow. Mm.
And the last thing I wanted to ask is, have you kept in touch with the cast over the years? Was this such a
seminal
film?
No, I talked to Zach, I talked to Phoebe, and everybody else who isn't dead. Because some of them are.
That helps.
No, we're a pretty tight-knit group, because this has become an unexpected phenomenon. I mean, nobody making the movie ever thought that it would be as popular as it was. I mean, it was this phenomenon. It opened the same day as Ghostbusters, which cost four times what our picture did. And wow. We ended up being neck and neck with it all over the country.
What a weekend. What an iconic weekend for boys
Those
and girls.
Those were the days.
Yeah, for sure. I could talk to you about this all night, but let's get to the reason that we got you here as far as our game is concerned. You heard the question that we asked of Mujan. We want to know three of the four winners of the Saturn Awards in 1984 that were from the movie Gremlins. Mujan gave us an answer for Best Supporting Actress. Helen, who did Mujan say?
Mujan said Phoebe Cates.
Well, and, I'm afraid that's not correct.
Oh.
No. Who did win that?
I believe it was Polly Holiday.
It was Polly Holiday, who we mentioned earlier, who played Mrs. Deagle. No point there, I'm sorry, but a very reasonable guess. All right, next, Mujan gave us the answer for the winner for Best Music. Helen, who did Mujan say, who she says she knows is not the correct answer?
Mujan said John Williams.
And Mr. Dante?
Well, it was Jeff. It was Jerry Goldsmith, who actually... was neck and neck with John Williams for a long part of their career until Jerry had the temerity to die.
The nerve. Yeah, the nerve. But both very, very accomplished film composers. It's easy to mix them up. And then finally, the answer that Mujan gave for who won the Saturn Award for Best Director. Helen, what did Mujan say?
Mujan said Joe Dante.
And?
I had my my Saturn Award for a long time as a doorstop because Saturn Awards are they don't last long. This is 1984. You know.
Are they also made of rubber like the Gremlins?
No, they were made out of some sort of pseudo metal. And they didn't really, I don't know very many people who got Saturn Awards during that period who actually still have theirs.
Oh.
Okay.
I hope the Oscars last longer. Than
wow. Pseudo metal. Yikes.
Yes. But the correct answer was Joe Dante. So that's a point for Mujan. Very good. Mujan, is there anything you'd like to say or ask of our expert Joe Dante while we have him here?
A thousand things. First of all, I'd like to apologize for being so laser focused on Gizmo.
It's perfectly okay.
I didn't remember so many of the actors. But that scene in the first movie where everyone is playing darts with Gizmo, the rumor is it's because the cast and the crew were so frustrated with just Gizmo in general.
That's
like, how
not
long
just
is that
a rumor.
True?
That's actually true. Gizmo, because he was so small and had been asked to do so much more than he was supposed to do, kept breaking down. And the more he broke down, the more people had to sit around and wait for him to be fixed. So one of the things that we did was we put a sign up on the wall of the studio and said, horrible things for the Gremlins to do to Gizmo. And it was basically because the crew was just sick and tired of having to, you know, sit around and wait for this bucket of bolts to work. And so the one we liked the best was the dartboard. And so we did the dartboard.
That's so great.
That's really cool. Mr. Dante, it was an honor to have you join us. I hope we get to have you back when someone inevitably will choose another one of your many classic movies as a topic. People want to find out more about you and your work. Tell us about the website they can go to.
TrailersFromHell.com, where we have just under 2,000 trailers with commentaries, by people like Guillermo del Toro and John Landis and Eli Roth and, you know, a whole lot of really interesting people telling you what they think about those movies. And then we have on that same site or on Instagram or whatever you get, we have our podcast, which is The Movies That Made Me, where people talk about the movies that made them want to be in the movies. It's not just one of those interview shows where they talk about their work. They talk about what, you know, what inspired them. And we've been doing a bunch of pandemic episodes where we have more than five or six people talking about what they're watching during the shutdown. And it's a lot of people have found it steers them to things that they might not have known about. And it's been fun. It's like giving back.
Well, you have definitely given back to us, and your movies have been an inspiration to many people, including a lot of us right here. Thank you again so much for joining us, Mr. Joe Dante.
Thanks.
Yay.
Thank you.
I loved Inner Space.
All right.
Thank you. thank you for the muscle car info.
Yeah, of course.
Excellent. All right, Helen, what is the score at the end of that round?
At the end of that round, John Roderick has 7.5 points and Mujan Zulfagari has 4 points.
All right, but now it is time for our final round we call Fast Facts. I'll read 10 statements and each contestant will answer with true or false. I'll start with John and alternate between each guest. Each correct answer is worth 1 point. This should determine the winner. Again, the answer to each statement is true or false. Here we begin. John, Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen were born on the same day.
True.
Correct.
Mujan, most twins are born on the same day.
True.
Correct.
John, Maggie and Jake Gyllenhaal were born on the same day.
False.
Correct.
That's right, she's 3 years older. Mujan, Marilyn Monroe and Mr. Rogers were born on the same day.
True.
Incorrect. Oh,
John, Marilyn Monroe and Jimmy Carter were born on the same day.
False.
Correct.
Mujan, Marilyn Monroe and Andy Griffith were born on the same day.
True.
Correct.
John, George W. Bush and Sylvester Stallone were born on the same day.
True.
Correct.
Mujan, Abraham Lincoln and Charles Darwin were born on the same day.
False.
Incorrect.
No, they really were. John, Gladys Knight and Rudy Giuliani were born on the same day.
True.
Correct.
Wow, yes, it is true.
Wow.
Mujan, as a lawyer, Rudy Giuliani used to represent Gladys Knight.
True.
Incorrect.
Oh. No, I'm sorry, he didn't. John, Gladys Knight sang at one of Rudy Giuliani's 3 weddings.
True.
Incorrect.
No, and finally, Mujan, Rudy wanted her to sing, but after the first 2 divorces, he could only afford the Pips.
True.
No, not
true. No, that's all right. We're not going to count those last two.
I wanted it
to be true as well. Who doesn't want to go see Rudy and the Pips? Let's give thanks to Mujan and John Roderick as Helen tabulates the final score. Helen, are you ready to announce the final score of tonight's game?
I am. At the end of the game, John Roderick has 12.5 points and Mujan Zulfagari has 6 points.
Congratulations, John. You are the facting champion on Go Fact Yourself. What will you do with your championship?
I feel like I should give half my points to Mujan.
Oh, no,
but
you would like to give 6¼ points?
6¼ points. Wait a minute. No, that would put her in the lead. That would make it a tie.
No, oh, I'll be great. I love this. What's happening?
What a startling turn of events. All right, that just leaves us the opportunity to promote any upcoming products, appearances, or services. John Roderick, where can people find you?
Well, as you know, we're in the middle of the Max Fun Drive, which was postponed many times. And so all of us at Max Fun appreciate listener support and my show, Friendly Fire, is a thing we're super proud of making. So I want to encourage everybody to go to maximumfun.org
/donate
/joinate. Max,
please go to joinate. I'm dying to see what's living there. Mujan, where can people find you?
So Mission to Zix is also part of the Max Fun Drive. Again, go to that website we just said. Also, we're in the 4th season, but you could start in the beginning like a TV show. I'm also in the current season of At Home with Amy Sedaris on True TV.
Nice.
And Not Too Late Show with Elmo is on HBO Max right now. And if you want to follow me on social media, which I'm not really on, and you'll be very disappointed, I'm at Mujan Z on Instagram, or as my ship, Bargerian Jade, at Bargerian Jade on Twitter.
Well, we are the opposite of disappointed. We are thrilled that we had Ms. Mujan Zulfagari. Ladies and gentlemen, my hosting partner is your friend and mine, Ms. Helen Hong.
Yes, I host a show called Go Fact Yourself
Oh, what is that on?
It is on Maximum.
Oh, boy.
It is on, you can donate to us at MaximumFun.org/slappypants.
Yep, /slappypants.
/slappypants.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, or something like that. And then you can follow me on the socials at Funny Helen Hong. Don't follow Not Funny Helen Hong. She ain't funny. Follow the funny one. Funny.
The funny, the Helen, the Hong, Ms. Helen Hong. And me, you can find me on Twitter at @J_Keith and on Instagram at jkeith.net, all spelled out. That just leaves me to thank John Roderick, Mujan Zalfagari, Vinny Costa, Joe Dante. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, all at GoFactorPod. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Update our wiki at GoFactorWiki.fandom.com and buy our T-shaped shirt at MaxFunStore.com. I'm J. Keith Van Stratton. Good night. Like what you hear? Come see us live someday. It's free. Go to GoFactorPod.com for our schedule and tickets. And give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts like Joey Matavi did. He, she, or they said, I support Helen and Jay Keith and the Go Fact Yourself Pod people by pledging and listening. Well worth the investment. Thanks, Joey Matavi. Did you go to MaximumFun.org/puppy whistle? What is it? What was it? Helen?
Go Fact Yourself is a panel quiz program devised by Jim Newman and J. Keith Van Stratton and comes to you via transcription from various homes across the country. Questions on Go Fact Yourself were compiled by the Trivia Industrial Complex. It is produced in collaboration with Maximum Fun. Go Fact Yourself's theme song and incidental music were written and performed by Jonathan Green. Maximum Fun's senior producer is Laura Swisher. Associate producer and editor is Julian Burrell. Special thanks to Kurt Carley, Mark Johnson, Robert Quigley at Motor Trend, Scott J. Langtow, Spencer Marks, Alex Kirschenbaum at Renfield Productions, Dr. Milo Harpstead, Sarah Rodenbaugh, Brandon J. Carr, Clint Tauscher, Mike Avellanos, Adam Nediff, Dave Bianchi, Eric Tran, and Christine Velada. I've been Helen Hong.
Let's go look at cute gremlins and drive muscle cars.
Woo-hoo!
That's a thing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it's not a singing show, but we really do want to thank you, because if you've gone that extra mile to become a Max Fun member, thank you so much for making this show possible. You would not be listening to this show right now and the thousands of others who do if it weren't for your support.
I thank you. Jakey thanks you. My dog Dodger thanks you. Cookie and Muffin the cats thank you. And if you join now, you can get a picture of one of our pets.
As grateful as we are, I got to say a very, very tiny percentage of people who listen to this show have gone ahead and become Max Fun members. If we can increase that just by even a little bit, if you're listening now, if we've brought you any pleasure or joy or a fun fact that you can share over the last months and years, please do consider joining. If we can just up the percentage of our listeners who become Max Fun members by even just a little bit, it makes a huge difference and we can go on to do even more big and wonderful things as the months progress.
We promise it will make you feel good.
Absolutely.
We promise. If you join and give us and kick us a little bit of dough, we promise you will feel good about it.
Yes. Now, if you haven't had a chance to become a member yet, or if you do want to upgrade or boost your membership, again, you can do that at MaximumFun.org/join. That's MaximumFun.org/join.
Joinate.
No, it is just join. We were just kidding about that part. Thanks again, guys. We'll see you soon. And thank you so much for listening to Go Fact Yourself.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.